Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Paddock Project. What a race we had in Baku yesterday. We have a new leader in the Constructors Championship with McLaren now up 20 points with a huge win from Oscar and an absolutely iconic drive. Announcers were calling it a generational drive. People were absolutely going wild, plus a double DNF from Checo and Sainz contact. We have so much to discuss. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Tiggy. Okay, overall thoughts and takeaways. This race was insane. I think the announcers were saying it's like it has all the elements to be a classic, a generational race, not just Oscar's drive, but there were so many crazy things that happened. We first had a fun quali, some big surprises with Lando out in Q1, Colapinto, the rookie at Williams, getting to Q3, among other things. And then race day also just really delivered. It was a crisp 4 a.m. my time. Someone was DMing me, welcome to being a West Coast F1 fan. So that was a rude awakening. And then with Singapore this coming weekend, also going to be rough. But the excitement really made up for the timing. And like Sarah, you were saying, we have a new constructors leader. We'll get to that and everything that that means and the stats on how long it's been since McLaren has led and all those things. But what a win for Oscar and Lando's recovery drive, getting knocked out in Q1, finishing in P4. Pretty amazing. And yeah, we'll get into our thoughts about the Checo Sainz clash, who's at fault, if anyone, and what that means for Checo's career, especially given this was supposed to be an amazing race for him and he had a lot of promise, but so much to discuss.
So much. And we just cannot emphasize how huge of a moment this is to have McLaren pulling ahead. Not only has McLaren not led constructors since 2014, they actually haven't won since 1998. So it's crazy. Over 25 years ago. And also we were looking back a little bit at the history because we were curious, and looking back at the past 15 years, Mercedes or Red Bull has won every constructors since 2010. There has not been any variety. There was obviously the generational switch where it was Red Bull 2010 through 2013, then the Mercedes era for 8 years, and now we switch back to Red Bull. But then even in the early 2000s, from 2000 to 2010, it was Ferrari 7 times. So really this whole millennium has been really marked by these periods of domination. It's so exciting to have the season that we're having, to have multiple teams in the fight like this. And to me, this just goes to show people are saying they think Oscar might be a future world champion. I completely see that. I think he's going to give Lando a run for his money for number one driver going forward. It's only his second season in F1, and I cannot think of a comparable drive of someone keeping a Ferrari or a top car behind them with DRS for 25 laps. It's
crazy.
Almost unfathomable. I don't think Lando would have done it. Even when we think back to when Max and Charles were battling in 2022, it just doesn't happen. Like, no one has DRS for more than 3 to 5. There isn't really a back and forth for more than 3 to 5 laps before someone ultimately pulls ahead. Also thinking of Max Lewis in 2021. The closest almost wild defense I can think of would be Checo a bit with Lewis in 2021. But again, that was probably Max 10 laps. And that was, oh, epic, insane defense. It's just wild to think of. I think very, very, very few drivers would have been capable of that performance with. Even given that Charles was struggling a bit on the tires, you have another hailed as a generational talent Ferrari driver under a second with DRS for 25 laps. It's
it's so amazing. And I think what you said about it being his second season, we just need to keep saying that because it seems so hard to believe. I mean, not just his talent, but his poise and everything else, his demeanor, his maturity. I mean, this is not an Oscar Piastri fan club podcast, but it basically is because
it is now.
Yeah, he's absolutely killing it.
I really can't think of other drivers who are so professional in a huge variety of circumstances, and he wins in such an even-handed, steady, respectful manner. He loses in such a sportsmanlike, respectful manner. The F1 TV, I was watching on F1 TV and the commentators were saying, Oscar Piastri, who just won the Grand Prix, is the most chilled person in Baku right now.
And meanwhile, his radio is like, I've never been more stressed in my life. Yeah. He sounds so chill. I'm like, wow, I wish my stress manifested like that.
He's like, thanks for driver of the day. I don't know how to say thank you in Azerbaijan, but thanks, everyone.
Sincerely, Oscar. Yeah. All right, let's move on to MVP and LVP. I feel like I know what you're going to say, so I'm going to let you take that. But I'm gonna give a shout out to the rookies, because Colapinto making it to Q3 in quali and then scoring points. I mean, amazing drive from Williams yesterday, but especially for Colapinto being able to do that in only his second race in that car and in a car that does not consistently deliver points. So that was amazing. And then Ollie coming in hot, scoring a point in P10 in a Haas. And then also, if that weren't enough, he outqualified and outperformed Hülkenberg, who is a very experienced driver. So that was amazing. I mean, Chess and I were joking in the preview, like, oh, we won't expect any points because he's in a Haas and not a Ferrari. But like, he delivered. It's crazy.
I'm so excited for next season and getting to have really strong rookie talent on the grid. Who knows? Is Colapinto going to make an appearance? If he starts getting points every race, who knows? Anything is possible in the new world we're living in. But we've been saying for the past several seasons, just there's so much deserving young driver talent out there. And it's the stars really have to perfectly align for you to get an opportunity in F1. And it's so exciting when people do. I already did my MVP, basically, in my overview. And it is Oscar. So
yes.
Tiggy, who is your LVP?
I think I have to go with this Checo Carlos crash, especially because it was totally avoidable. And given how much was on the line, I think especially for Checo, but for Carlos as well, as he's leaving Ferrari, it just felt so unnecessary. And I'm not saying it was Checo's fault or Carlos's fault here. I'm being very careful to say the crash is the LVP, but I think from both of their sides, that could have easily been avoided.
I totally agree, because it almost doesn't matter who's at fault. It's such a bizarre accident having people collide on a street. And you're completely right. When so much is on the line in the constructors' battle for Checo, for his career and his future at Red Bull, but in the more near term for the constructors' battle,
totally.
For kind of both teams. I mean, Ferrari is still in it, even if the difference between P2 and P3 is still a ton of money. Carlos wants to go out on a high. And it made me remember too. Remember in Monaco when Checo had that bizarre crash with K-Mag on the street, and they had that huge wreck. And it was one of those, it's a very similar situation where it seemed maybe more like K-Mag's fault, but it was just, you can see the foot for the bigger picture. And sometimes drivers just fail to do that.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, from every angle, it looked like someone else's fault. And I think the top angle and the back angle are the best to look at, but yeah, just it was bizarre. Almost like both of them spaced out and then all of a sudden they were in the wall. Like, what?
Yeah, and it seems like one thing that might have been a factor, George said actually in his post-race interview, and there are some photos of this, that the way the afternoon sun was positioned, it was really hard to see on that straight with the sun. And they were potentially trying to get a slipstream from Charles. Bizarre is the right word, because it's so strange. It's hard to tell what happened. It's almost like both got blinded by the sun and zoned out and were trying to get a slipstream at the same time. And just,
yeah. And, but the radio were so mad. Checo's especially, he was so mad. Yeah. I feel like you don't often hear Checo on the radio like that. And he was swearing. I feel like Checo and Sainz were never great friends, but this has put the nail in the coffin.
They also joked in the they were joking in the cool down room of, oh, those two aren't getting along this weekend, and it's come to its conclusion.
Yikes.
Wow. Yeah. My LVP is Max's car help.
Yeah.
It seemed like everything that could be wrong with the car at various points in the race, he was talking about his brakes not functioning properly. No rear grip, big issues with tire temperature and degradation, just everything seemed to be going wrong. And until that crash, Checo really was outperforming him this weekend. It was one of the very, very few weekends where, not only in terms of performance, but just in terms of being able to figure out the car, it seemed like Checo really did have the upper hand.
Yeah. I've been having a hard time getting used to Max's Instagram captions that are like, we'll come back better next race. And it's like, I feel like I never, ever read any of that in the past many years.
Not the weekend we wanted. Yeah.
I'm like, man, I'm used to that for every other driver on the grid, but not for Max.
This is building up though to what's going to manifesting a really awesome Max victory in the next couple races. That will be, you could never say underdog. Max is not an underdog to the Reigning World Drivers Championship, but it'll be a little bit, it'll be like a 24-hour redemption arc for him. So I'm excited for that.
I'm also excited. I will get to this, I'm sure, when we talk about teams, but like what Max's future may hold in terms of team if the direction is heading this way. So, but before we get there, so hot takes. I did horribly this weekend. I said no McLarens on podium. That was definitely not true. We had a McLaren win, but I am happy that that one was wrong. I wasn't hoping for that, but I just thought maybe it's time for them to put a foot wrong. And then I also said a Bottas signing, which also did not come true. But I am excited to talk about who we think might get that stake seat, because I feel like it's got to be announced soon.
It's taken a while. I think they, it's a lot they're working through. But we also have to give a shout out to Chessa. She's currently in Italy. That is why she is not with us right now. But Chessa had said Checo P2. So at least
could have been.
It was close. She did say Oscar finishing ahead of Lando, which was big. And then Ollie points. So
all right.
Solid performance. 2 for 3. I did not have a particular hot take, but I feel like my main strong opinion last recap was saying Lando was not in the driver's championship fight. So we will discuss that further down.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning F1 championships is sometimes also what you need to keep your car running day in and day out. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So practice before we dive into quali in the race. FP1, a lot of action here. We had 3 red flags. The Red Bulls looked strong. Leclerc had a big crash at turn 15, and then Colapinto later also crashed. FP2, Charles continued to be a bit cursed by turn 15, but made it through the session, set the fastest time. There were some other very close calls with the wall. I feel like people were just getting used to this circuit. It's a street circuit. It's a little windy.
Totally.
Narrow at points. So yeah, then FP3, Ocon had a car failure, which was really disappointing with all the reliability issues he's had. And then Ollie had a crash, was so upset with himself on the radio. And George set the fastest lap. So kind of mixed board across the practice sessions.
Also even more impressive with Colapinto and Berman getting points after those crashes, because it's just such a knock to confidence. You're trying to orient yourself with a really challenging, really technical circuit. It's amazing job. For quali, wow, so much happened this weekend. Oh my God, we haven't even talked about
it. Feels like ages ago. But
it's, feels like 10 years ago. As you all know, the wild happening here was Lando was out in Q1 and Piastri also barely made it out of Q1. Lando was on his last flying lap and there was a yellow flag and he had to lift a bit. But what's weird about the situation is Q1 is 15 minutes long. He should have set a time several minutes earlier. This, because this isn't going for pole. It's just going to not be in the slowest 5 times. It seems like there's really no reason to leave it until the last second in Q1, especially on a street circuit where you are always going to have a ton of yellow flags in quali. It's always going to happen. So it's, at least to me, it still seems a bit unclear what happened. It seems like it might have been kind of a coordination error from the team because his engineer apologized on the radio. Lando, I feel like when you get so upset, he just doesn't really speak. He was being so quiet in the media pen after, looked so defeated, was kind of barely answering questions. Meanwhile, Berman and Colapinto were both through, both out of Q1. So for cuts, we had Ricciardo, Norris, Bottas, Joe, and Ocon.
Yeah, it's so tough for Lando, especially when there's so much on the line right now. Totally. Like, even if we think it's such a stretch for him to win drivers, it's still in the conversation. It's still on the table.
Statistically possible, yeah.
Yes. To be knocked out in Q1, just you probably feel like the whole weight of that is just crashing down. For Q2, the toe is extremely important on this circuit because of how long the straight is. And Charles during Q2 was upset about the team not setting it up properly for him to get a toe from Carlos. Meanwhile, Sainz said that he kept missing the toe. So I feel like neither of the Ferrari drivers were happy. Both Williams, though, the big news were they were through to Q3, Colapinto ahead of Albon, and then Ollie just missed Q3 and was upset. But for cuts, we had Ollie, Yuki, Pierre Gasly, Hülkenberg, and Lance Stroll. And then, unfortunately, later Gasly was disqualified from quali after a fuel flow violation. So really bad luck there.
For Q3, again, more eventfulness here. When Albon pulled out for his last flying lap, a huge yellow cooling fan, one of the massive fans they put on in the garage, was still attached to the roll hoop, basically up behind his head. And everyone seemed to realize, they realized in the garage after he pulled out, he was already at the exit of the pit lane. So he had to stay parked at the exit and then reach behind him and remove it and throw it aside himself. Because as a reminder, if you get any assistance from the marshals, their hands are on your car, anything like that, you can't continue on in the session. There was still dry ice sitting on his car, total wild. Sadly, he didn't make it out in time then after being parked to get in a final flying lap.
So, so brutal. But the highlight here, pole for Charles. He was dominant all session. Didn't really seem like it would be a huge contest. He's just so strong at this track. This is his fourth consecutive pole at Baku, and he took it by 0.3. Piastri did have a big lap for P2. And then one thing to note here is that P1 and P3 are definitely the better side of the track. P2 is on the side with less grip. So in a sense, starting P3 can be better than P2. The Red Bulls looked decent earlier in the session, but in Q3, they were just not really a factor. Checo was P4, Max was P6. And then results, we had, like we said, Leclerc pole, then Piastri, Sainz, Checo, Russell, Max, Hamilton, Alonso, Colapinto coming in hot there, and Albon.
Getting into the race, so much to talk about. So we're going to talk about some highlights and our thoughts on the more eventful moments. In terms of some background on race day, most drivers started on mediums. They were trying to do a one-stop strategy. So pit stops weren't a huge factor in this race, or not as much as some other races recently, because for most people, it was just a one-stop onto hards. Lewis and Ocon both started from the pit lane. Lewis got a new engine, several new power unit components, started just kind of the beginning of a brutal day on the track for him, as did Ocon. And then in terms of the start, it's funny, the race start was not even close to being the most exciting component of this race. Charles had a really excellent getaway. He easily launched out of Oscar into turn one, so it wasn't even close to being a side-by-side battle into turn one. The Red Bulls also had a great start, so things kind of went backwards from there. But Checo had a great start, got out ahead of Sainz, and then Max pulled ahead of George. And Lando also, to note, just really started quickly picking off positions from the very beginning. He was on it from the start.
Yeah, it's always fun. I mean, I like a dramatic start, but it's fun when there's most of the action is like during the race, you know?
Yeah, late breaking.
Yes.
Two laps.
So speaking of the battle for the lead especially. So first, a fun fact, the run from turn 16 to turn one is the longest full throttle stretch on the F1 calendar, and we really definitely saw some fun action yesterday. So around lap 20, Oscar threw this race into a wild state at turn one when he had a huge overtake to dive past Charles. It was a very late breaking move from him, and so tight in the 1-2 spot. Charles was hanging on so close, like we said, in the DRS range for over 25 laps, but Oscar was just laying down that defense. Really just incredible driving from both of them, with Charles in DRS range, even as close as 0.5 back, lap after lap after lap, and had a few looks, but Oscar was just driving flawlessly, giving no opportunities. So it was really, really fun to watch. It's great racing.
It dropped to as little as 0.3, 0.4, and a lot of it was 5 tenths pretty consistently. It wasn't even like it was barely a second. It was just so close. And then meanwhile, this kind of battle allowed Checo to catch up to within DRS range of Charles. So all three were within a second of each other for a bit. And then this kind of started the point where Charles's engineer started sounding like a motivational speaker, which was very funny. Just, I wonder what Charles thinks about what he would like to be told in this type of situation. But he just was kind of saying, keep this up, Charles, keep it up, as I was approaching 20 laps within DRS range. And I don't know if that's helpful at that point. Maybe it is. You want to hear some pump up, but I don't know.
That's such a good point. That's hilarious. Okay, and then with 2 laps left, this is where the crazy collision between Sainz and Checo happened. Huge impact on the straight. Checo had gotten past Charles for P2, but then Charles fought back and Sainz also got through past Checo during that battle. And then while Sainz and Checo were suddenly fighting for P3, they just had that bizarre, like we were mentioning, crash on the straight. They almost drifted into each other at high speed. And we asked on Instagram what you all thought, and you all were very closely divided on whose fault you thought it was. Ultimately, it was a racing incident, and the stewards decided not to take any action. They were both summoned. They both might have been focused on trying to move over to get the slipstream from Charles. Also, we were mentioning the afternoon sun, so maybe that was hard to see, but the race did finish on a virtual safety card. And this put George into the stealthy P3 that he got and kind of bumped everyone else up the line. So we can thank Ollie's points a bit for that.
Yes, crash. Some big improvements there. And also Lando, speaking of stealthy, had a very stealthy P4. Max and Lando were kind of really grinding in the P5 to P7 range for most of the race, but that crash also bumped Lando up. There was a little bit of a battle between Lando and Max at a couple points. Max was trying to overtake Lando, but Lando was defending super hard, kind of at the midpoint of the race. Max really wasn't confident enough on his braking, and he just couldn't get past Lando. Then George also got past Max, so Max was just really not a factor at the front this race. In the last stint, Lando was setting fastest laps repeatedly with about 10 laps left, and then with 2 laps left, he had a huge DRS moment on the straight, overtook Max on the outside. One thing that was interesting to note that we noticed was Lando's engineer said at one point, kind of towards the end when Lando was setting all these fastest laps, his engineer said, imagine Andrea on your shoulder saying zero wheel spin on every exit. So again, with the motivational radio, but interesting because we've talked about Lando's starts and he really has been struggling with wheel spin off the line. So that was kind of interesting. And then our radio of the week was, of course, Oscar, quote, probably the most stressful afternoon of my life.
Sounding so though. Stressed.
Yeah. Sounding like he's on the beach.
Okay, friends, today we're talking about sleep and specifically getting better sleep. If you can relate to having trouble falling asleep and staying asleep and getting good quality sleep, then listen up. We are so excited to share a new product we've been using from Beam, their Dream Powder. Our listeners will get a special discount on this Dream Powder. It's a science-backed, healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. It tastes insane. I did it last night and I woke up this Monday morning feeling incredibly refreshed. I gave it to my little sister and she loved it too. They also have amazing flavors, sea salt caramel, brownie batter, vanilla chai, and then of course the original flavor, cinnamon cocoa. It's been tested for high quality efficacy and formulated to ease your body into rest, supporting all four stages of the sleep cycle to help you stay asleep longer and fall asleep faster. Other sleep aids can cause next day grogginess, but Dream contains a powerful all natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. If you want to try the best-selling Dream Powder, get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/paddockproject and use code paddockproject at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/paddockproject and use code paddockproject for up to 40% off. Like most people, we love a great deal, but what we don't love is jumping through a million hoops just to end up saving a few dollars, especially when it comes to wireless plans. There's so many promos and offers out there, but they do really make it hard to get good quality savings. With Mint Mobile, it really is so easy though. For just $15 a month, you can get a wireless plan when you get a 3-month plan. And the website and activation process are so seamless. Honestly, the longest part of this process is going to be the time that you spend on hold trying to break up with your old mobile provider. To get started, go to mintmobile.com/F1arethegirls. There you can see that right now all 3 month plans are only $15 a month, including the unlimited plan. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, and you can bring your old phone number along with all of your existing contacts. So to get this new customer offer and your new 3 month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/F1arethegirls. That's mintmobile.com/F1arethegirls. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/F1arethegirls. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions may apply. We have been very busy lately and have been really trying to do everything we can to feel our best as we wind up the summer and head into a very busy fall. And one thing we've been doing to help us and support us is using our Happy Mammoth products, especially Estrogen Control. It helps to support our hormones and alleviate any of those pesky PMS symptoms, including bloating. And it also assists in maintaining cognitive health and promoting liver function and digestive health. Happy Mammoth also has the amazing Hormone Harmony supplement dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women, and they make no compromise when it comes to quality. For a limited time, get 15% off your order at happymammoth.com with code F1RTheGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code F1RTheGirls for 15% off today.
All right, we have to get into standings, I think, before we go team by team. McLaren, like we said, leading Constructors' Championship for the first time since 2014. To bring us back to 2014, McLaren drivers were Jensen Button and a rookie named none other than Kevin Magnussen. And in 2014, Mercedes ended up, like we were saying, starting their 8-year constructors streak. So the last time McLaren actually won a constructors was in 1998 with David Coulthard, who is now everybody's favorite commentator, and Mika Häkkinen. So just a little bit of a blast from the past, but it shows you how long this time has been and how much it's been coming. So for the standings, we have McLaren with 476, Red Bull with 456. So 20 points. It's not even like they passed them by 1 point.
By 20 two, points, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot. Ferrari, 425. So also not that far off. Mercedes, 309. And then it starts to drop off from there. But yeah, we've got a full battle on our hands.
Totally. And for the Drivers' Championship. So Lando only closed the gap by 3 points this weekend. It's given damage control after how Saturday went, it is great that they were even able to close the gap at all and not have it be a net loss for the weekend. But Max is still very, very comfortably ahead. He has 313 and Lando has 254. So the deficit is now 59 points with 7 races left. So what that means is Lando, to have a chance, basically needs to beat Max by about 8 to 9 points every race. So an equivalent there could be Lando winning and Max coming in second or third, some combination of the remaining races. But of course, there are so many variables. That is not the type of season we're seeing of a consistent 1-2 or even a consistent podium. And as we saw today with the Checo Sainz DNF, we're really getting to the point that a DNF or a no points finish from either driver would have a massive impact. Mm-hmm. So thinking about reliability, taking risks on starts, those are all going to be huge factors. And that's something that Max has a lot more experience with than Lando, kind of driving for the championship in this type of situation. But in terms of after Norris, we have Leclerc with 235, Piastri with 222, so also quite tight for P3. And then Sainz with 184 and Lewis with 166.
Crazy. Four teams. Let's talk about McLaren first, since they are now first in constructors. So incredible recovery race, like we said, from Lando to go from a Q1 exit to a P4 finish. But I think the most interesting thing to talk about is the papaya rule situation. Before this race, McLaren made the explicit decision to favor Lando for at least a few races while the Drivers' Championship is in contention. So they were saying that Oscar has agreed to help Lando. Lando was saying, you know, if Oscar's fighting for a win or, you know, he's earned it, we're not going to just like have me drive by. But that said, Oscar is going to be helping out Lando in that quest. But Meanwhile, Oscar is the top scorer on the grid over the last 7 Grand Prix with 135 points. So yes, he's not in P2 currently, but what do you think of this? How does McLaren handle this for the rest of the season?
It's such an interesting issue, especially what we're saying about Oscar being driving on Lando's level a lot of the time or outdriving him this weekend. He has been performing amazingly. I really like that they're making it explicit and also making the expectations really clear with the drivers ahead of time, letting it sink in. Obviously, drivers still sometimes ignore team orders, even when they've been told ahead of time, this is what's going to happen. But I think just setting that expectation within the team and also making it really clear to Oscar and the public, I think they're trying to emphasize they view this as a temporary situation while the championship is still in contention and while Lando is the only person who kind of mathematically has any type of chance. Oscar is just not in that fight at this point. So I do think it makes sense to prioritize Lando where they can, but I like that they're not taking it too far, because I also think we'll get into this more when we talk about Red Bull. Realistically, I don't think Lando's going to win. And so long term, if they're trying to set themselves up for next year in 2026, I think it can be more damaging to have if there, for example, was a super frustrated and upset Oscar and a really bad dynamic between the drivers from having an intense team order situation. I think that could ultimately be more damaging. And also just in terms of public perception, people kind of hate team orders a lot of the time just as a concept. But it's almost you're going to be criticized if you do and criticized if you don't, because if you tell explicit prioritization of Lando, you get criticized for not letting them race. And then if you let them race, there's a ton of criticism of, oh, you need to be putting all your weight behind one driver if you want to have any chance. So I think they're kind of doing the best they can to navigate right now.
Yeah, I do think that they're playing the long game. And I do think starting next season, it will be a clean slate. If Oscar is outperforming Lando, they're not going to be like, oh, sorry, Lando's number one driver. I think they'll let them race. And I think they're aware that they have 2 world championship caliber drivers. And we don't know which one, maybe more so or first or whoever. But yeah, I think that they're trying to play the long game. And I hope that they can be transparent and explicit and clear internally, at least with the drivers, so that no one is feeling like they're getting the short end of the stick or that it's not fair, because I think it's a really hard situation to handle. For Red Bull, we were saying Max super unhappy with the car. He said at different points that the brakes weren't working properly, that the car didn't have any bite, that there was no rear grip. Ended up with a P5, would have been a P7 if it weren't for the crash, which feels crazy to think of Max in P7, but it was one of the rare weekends where Checo seemed much more in tune with the car. This ended a 33 race streak of Max outqualifying Checo, which is crazy.
That's an insane statistic. That's over a season.
Yes, that is a season and a half, basically. Max has now gone 7 races without a win and had 2 podiums in that stretch. Checo's last podium was in China in April. So we got to, Sarah, I want to hear your thoughts here. Are they still in the Constructors' Championship fight? And I think I know what you think about drivers, but I want to hear your thoughts.
I am coming to terms with the fact that I think this is not a fluke now. It seems clear that they've kind of fallen off a bit of a cliff in relation to the other teams. But I do think in F1, and all of us feel this way when we've just watched a big race with amazing performance from one team and poor performance from another team, I think things tend to be a bit more stable and slow to change over time sometimes than we realize. And I do think even with a bit of a rough stretch, they are still one of the top cars. And with a multiple world champion driver who's repeatedly shown that he can put that car much higher on the grid than it arguably deserves to be. And so I think I would be saying, I think it would maybe be much closer in the driver's championship at this point if it weren't for Max and feeling confident that even with a car that's worthy of P7, I think he can do enough to kind of get that into P4, P3, even if he has to be, even if it's kind of scrappy, it might not be a beautiful, triumphant end to the season. It might be feel like really more of a downturn. But I think ultimately for drivers, what's really, really going to hurt Lando is the fact that now it's not just Lando v. Max. There's Ferrari in the mix, maybe sometimes Checo, maybe sometimes a Mercedes driver. So it's not a situation where and Oscar too is in the mix. So it's just not a situation where every time points are being taken off Max, it's being taken by Lando. That's ultimately why I think it's not going to happen. But it'll be super anticlimactic. I feel like it's going to be kind of an end to the season where maybe Max wins by 30 points, but with only a couple wins in the whole back half of the season and really having to kind of fight for even podiums at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I like what you said about, it's not one person taking points away from Max. And you also have faith in Red Bull, sort of like the mean reversion theory. Like they're going to revert to a mean that is probably a much higher baseline than other teams in that. So I think that's definitely true. I think there's, you can't count them out of the Constructors Championship fight. Like we're still only 20 points away. Like we've always said, Checo needs to be a big part of that for Red Bull if they are going to have a chance. But yeah, I don't think we can count them out of that fight. But I do agree with you that Drivers' Championship does seem pretty tough to take away from Max given the first half of the season, but mathematically possible. So,
and it's so we'll exciting now for viewers and just for fans because now every Q1 or Q2 exit, every DNF, every reliability problem, every potential engine component and needing to take a grid penalty, all of that now has huge consequences.
For sure. For Ferrari. So Charles just thought they didn't really have the pace on the hard tires, didn't optimize the setup. He was hard on himself about not defending well enough when Oscar passed him for the lead, felt like a missed opportunity just given how amazing he is at this track. But that said, I feel like he was being a little harsh on himself with the 25-lap battle. Like, I think Agreed. That was less Charles's not driving well and more Oscar just being a phenom for those 25 laps. But a huge missed podium opportunity for Sainz, ending in what seemed like a very avoidable DNF.
For Mercedes, it was a really tough day out there for Lewis. The car was simply not there. At one point, he said, "Are you seeing how I have to drive this thing?" Help. The commentators at one point said Lewis has been waiting a long time to take that 12th place, and that was getting past Ollie Berman. So he finished P9, but he would have been out of the points without the crash. So definitely a demoralizing day for him. George did say he thought they were one of the quickest cars on the hard specifically, so that's a positive. He got a surprise podium at the end, but I feel like George is always very measured. He said in his interview, he said, without the crash, we would have been in P5, which is much more kind of realistically where we were operating.
Yeah, I hope for Mercedes that they're not back in the land of, we don't know what's going on with the car. So hopefully this was just one race and then they'll get back there. For Aston Martin, Stroll got a puncture on lap one after his contact with Yuki, ran most of the race toward the back of the pack, but then had to retire towards the end. Alonso did get some good battles in, solid points in P6, but the real talk of the town for Aston Martin is the Adrian Newey story. It's just such huge news in F1. We talked about this during the preview, but on the BBC podcast this week, they had an interesting discussion about how this throws a big question mark into the driver's market for 2026. So the question that was raised and that we were talking about a little bit earlier is a big name like Max, would he be intrigued by Aston Martin? Would he be intrigued potentially by another team? Who knows? So I don't know. Sarah, what do you think? Do you think Max would go to Aston?
I think so. I think it's really going to depend what Red Bull looks like end of this season, start of next season. But I think Max ultimately is a racer and will do whatever he can to be at the top team. And he's had such a strong relationship with Red Bull and such loyalty there. But ultimately, I think if it's not the best choice for him, he's not going to pass up an opportunity that he thinks he has. And especially all that we heard earlier in the season about kind of a power struggle within Red Bull and potentially Max and his dad being kind of more in the Adrian Newey camp than in the Christian Horner camp. If Aston Martin has unlimited budget, Adrian Newey building a 2026 car or giving Max other things he's looking for.
Honda engines.
Yeah, great point. I think I think he would for sure at least be thinking about it.
Yeah. The question on the other side is, I mean, I feel like any team would be so stupid not to take Max, but would Lawrence Stroll part ways with his son?
This on the BBC podcast, this was so funny. I forget who it was. Was Andrew Benson or someone else? This was such a good episode. But someone said, oh, he would fire Alonso before he would fire his own son. And it would be Max and Lance.
Oh my God. What would they be like as teammates?
I think it would – I just don't know if Max would be able to keep a straight face. I feel like it would kind of be the issue. Max is so blunt that –
oh, I don't really know how
that would work. Max and Alonso, who knows?
Max and Alonso could be spicy. I feel like Alonso's not trying to go anywhere anytime soon.
Totally.
I mean, all the quotes that came out about Alonso offering like part of his salary to go towards Adrian Newey, like 10%, 20%, whatever it is, like, please. I think Alonso's the happiest person in that camp that Newey is a part of the team. So I feel like he's not going anywhere.
Oh, another thing they said on the BBC podcast that was so interesting, word on the street, is that the talks between Newey and Ferrari had cooled and that it was kind of a loss of interest on the Ferrari end.
What?
Versus on the Newey end, which is also fascinating. And I feel like probably Lewis would be really upset if that ended up being the case and then Alonso gets Newey instead of Lewis getting Newey.
Maybe Ferrari was like, we can't afford Lewis and Newey, and we've already committed.
Also, totally possible. Lewis. It's so expensive.
It's crazy. I mean, $100 million, whatever it is the top two driver salaries combined, Max and Lewis. That's an insane amount of money.
That's so true. And who knows what Ferrari is paying Lewis to go over? That must also be an astronomical amount.
Seriously. One thing Newey did say was that one thing that appealed to him about Aston Martin was having Lawrence Stroll be such an involved owner and sort of more like an old school team boss hybrid role with the ownership, since the owners used to be so much more involved in the day to day. So I thought that was interesting. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what that does, but yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting point to emphasize. I guess maybe having less cooks in the kitchen to some extent, if the owner's really powerful and you mm-hmm. don't have, I imagine there's a lot of kind of power struggles that probably happen between the ownership, the CEO, the team principal, just a lot of names at the top in the conversation. And maybe him and Lawrence just really bonded. Who knows?
The videos, the behind the scenes videos of that like press day where they announced they were so funny. They seem like one big happy family right now. So let's see. For V-Carb, not much of a factor here. Unfortunately, Yuki had to retire after his lap one contact with Stroll, and then Daniel Ricciardo was P13. So not a lot to write home about.
I'll take this as another opportunity to admit that he was right and I was wrong about Daniel Ricciardo. I'm sad.
I'm not saying anything. I'm just waiting for this seat to be filled and signed.
What's your latest thought? What are your thoughts on Liam?
I really think Liam deserves it, and I think they should give it to him. We were talking a little bit about this on the preview, but V-Carb, and we said this many times before, if you are a junior development team, what are you doing with a very, very experienced driver who is not performing at his peak and potentially not in contention for the parent company or parent team, if you want to call it that, seat, i.e. Daniel Ricciardo? It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It feels – I know that Daniel's bringing a lot to the team and a lot to the business, but I do feel like if you're thinking longer term and Checo's not working out, like, give Liam a chance. Give him a chance. See what happens. I don't know.
I agree with you as much as it pains me to say, but I still really don't want Danny to leave F1. It's such a hard question, but
Danny Mistake, bright green. He could look good in bright green.
He could be a huge part of a big rebrand and bring a ton of experience in F1. He would bring a lot of value add, but the V-Car point, it also, I feel like, raises question marks about Yuki, to your point of the role of the team and the purpose it's supposed to serve. Because if it is just supposed to be potential candidates for promotion or Red Bull, I kind of feel like at this point, Red Bull senior team is never taking Yuki either. They just I don't think view him as that. And so you're right. It's kind of either reconsidering what their stated purpose is as a team maybe, or thinking about getting new drivers.
I wonder how much of the Yuki thing is Helmut Marko. And I wonder versus other people in the Red Bull camp. I do feel like there are other people in the Red Bull team who would want to see Yuki. I mean, we hear, I think it's Peter Bayer, the CEO of VCarb, like talking about Yuki and how amazing he's been doing. And we've heard that from other team principals about Yuki recently in the past. So I feel like it might be a Helmut Marko thing. I don't know.
Okay. I like this new take actually of Daniel Ricciardo to stake, because I'm remembering that Mattia Binotto is going to be the
It's true. Seeing him in green is a weird. There are some rumors out there about Gabriel Bortoleto, who is the leader of F2 right now. He's a McLaren Academy driver, and he's actually part of Alonso's driver management. He's like an Alonso protege, but he's killing it in F2, and it's his first year in F2.
Wow.
And so his name has been in circulation for stake, but I don't know. It makes you wonder. I understand the Kimi phenomenon thing, but he's also like P6 or P7 in F2. And there are all these names that are doing really well who don't get thrown around as much, which I find interesting.
Yeah, and Berman's not on the top either. And there's also Isaac, the F2 driver in the Red Bull organization. There's so many names in F2. And also now Colapinto.
Yeah.
And so thinking about these seats that haven't – the remaining couple of seats that haven't been announced, Colapinto could be an option for stake, seeing what he can do the remainder of this season. We'll see.
For Alpine, tough weekend with a pit lane start for Ocon and a quali disqualification for Gasly, but Gasly was able to recover to P12, Ocon to P15. So not a lot to bring home in terms of points, but hopefully they'll have better luck next weekend.
Same for stake. Sadly, Joe was P14 and Bottas was last of the cars that finished in P16. That is a huge question mark about that open seat to be with Nico Hülkenberg. So we will be keeping our eyes peeled for that. A lot of possibilities at this point. It's odd to me that they haven't yet announced Bottas, if that is what they're going with. So we'll see. For Haas, meanwhile, speaking of seats, it was a very impressive weekend from Ollie Berman, who outperformed the Hulk, who was one of the most experienced drivers on the grid. Ollie just snuck into the points at P10, and Nico was close behind him in P11.
And for Williams, last but very much not least this weekend, amazing weekend for the team. Double points finish, Colapinto P8, Albon P7. I think that's 10 points, so really awesome. It's the team's best result in years since mid-2021 and the biggest points haul since the 2022 regulations started. So Alex said that to get P7 and P8 is, quote, luxurious. I love that word. I love that for you, Alex. Why don't you just luxuriate over there in those 10 points? And Williams moved ahead of Alpine in the championship, which was a year-end target for them. So hopefully they can keep it up there, and really awesome. It seems like the vibes are good in the team right now.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. This season, as we've been saying, continues to be a thriller. There is so much on the line now, so definitely tune in for Singapore next weekend. We can't wait to discuss.